interview with Wilbur Kay on the 11th of February 2002. The interviewers are Arnold Thackeray and Jerry Galwis. And Dr. Kay, can you begin by just very quickly sketching in something about your own family background, your pre-college education, and the first beginnings of your development of an interest in science in general and chemistry in particular?
As I read the book you sent to me on Dr. Becklin, I was rather surprised myself how our backgrounds, history, parallel each other. I became interested in science when I was about 7 years old. I had a little laboratory in the basement of our house in Lake Helen, Florida, and did many of the things that are mentioned there about making chemicals and blowing up the place. And that kept on until when I got out of college and started in earnest to develop instruments. That was about 19. Well, I graduated from Stetson University in 1942. I graduated from high school in 1939. And that's about when instruments really started to bloom. If you look back in the Journal of the Optical Society, a good place to find that, because you'll find that about 1930 there was only one or two instruments that were either advertised or discussed. Every year thereafter, it just grew geometrically.
Did you already know when you went to Stetson that you wanted to do science? Did you?
Oh yes, I knew that when I was in the seventh grade. I had that little laboratory and I puttered around in it.
Had your parents any scientific interest? What did they make of this?
No, they always helped me along where they could. My father bought me a chemistry set. He bought it, and he also bought a small microscope for me. And that would have been before 1939, because we lived in Lake Helen at that time, and we moved from Lake Helen in 1937. So that dates it pretty much.
You went from Stetson to Illinois. How did you choose? Why did you choose Illinois? How did that work?
I chose Illinois primarily because they offered me a scholarship, and but I was happy with that. I had, when I was a senior in college, looking around for colleges to go to, there were three primary: Caltech, MIT, and the third escapes me. But I, when I went to those schools, fates kind of took over. It wasn't so much that I was purposely going in one direction, as it was that there's where the trail was easiest. And I remember when we got the letters from these schools, I was rather disappointed that the only one that offered a scholarship was the University of Illinois.
Did you actually go and visit at Caltech or MIT, or was it by correspondence?
No, I did not go to those when I was looking for a job. The reason that I had tried to get into Caltech was Linus Pauling, and the work he was doing with X-rays. I wrote to him to see if I could get in, and he said that they were just too busy with war work to take on any graduate school students.
Did you know that you had a particular interest in instrumentation already when you were an undergraduate at Stetson, or not?
I had that interest when I was in grammar school.
Okay.
I would love to, especially when I got that microscope, look into what bees' stingers looked like and things like that. And then when I got into college, well, even before I got into college, in high school when I took chemistry, my teacher encouraged me and allowed me to go into the lab after hours and do whatever I wanted to do. And a lot of that was elemental instrumentation.
Can you, if you're right back now in the high school world, what instruments would come to mind? They'd have balances, of course.
Oh yes, they had balances and pipettes and condensers and things like that. They were in a way instrumental. I also took physics my last year in high school, but we didn't have any experimental equipment to fool with. But I made a small telescope and I'm sure there were direct instruments involved.
What about Stetson? Was the small more sophisticated stuff available at Stetson?
Yes.
Or not?
Yes, in the laboratories we had a lot of chemical instruments and what you might call physical instruments. I can't quite remember what they were. I remember fooling around the laboratory. I remember one instance when Ginny, you'll have to help me out here. All of a sudden, my memory has escaped me.
Dr. Kahn.
Pardon?
Dr. Kahn.
Dr. Kahn was my mentor in college. He's the one that got me that scholarship to the University of Illinois.
Illinois was a pretty powerhouse school.
It was, but at the time I went there, it was just a bare skeleton. It was right in the middle of the war. And most male students had gone, and there were just the girls. That was 1942.
So was there a, what was your entering class of PhD students. Was there a group?
Well, I graduated in 1940. Graduate college in 42 and graduate school in 44. I had gone straight through from almost from grammar school to a PhD in a very short period of time. And I was barely 22 when I got my PhD. At that time, the graduate class in Illinois, so PhD, was only about a half a dozen.
Who were you working with at Illinois? Who was your PhD supervisor?
Dr. Clark. He was responsible for my thesis development. And he was heavily involved in war work as well, so I didn't get as much help from him as I would have hoped for.
So what were you up to for your PhD work? What were you doing?
Well, I learned just as soon as I'd gotten the letter from Illinois, I looked it up and found out that the major work being done in the chemistry and physics area was X-ray diffraction. So I did my thesis in X-ray diffraction. The thesis was in three parts. One had to do with the oxidation of oils by heat. The second was the discrimination between the different types of diphenyl hydrazones.
Hey!
And in the last year of my work at Illinois, it was on the structure of penicillin. This work was highly classified, and we considered it very important. I was using one of the few instrumentations that could apply to the study of penicillin, and it made a great impression on me. But here I was working on a very important chemical, and I had no tools to do it with, none to speak of. So I had kind of been bent toward instrumentation strongly right then when I was in college.
What had you got to, if you were trying, penicillin's a complicated molecule, what were you trying to study it with?
X-ray diffraction. That was one of the few tools that was available to study molecular structure. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Clark was an authority in this area, and the school was, again, one of the few places that taught it.
Were you, what was your diffraction apparatus? Did you build that yourself? Did you inherit it? Was it commercial? What?
I got my hands on one to work with when I first went to Illinois. And Dr. Clark had done a lot of work in not so much structure as an analysis of one kind of penicillin against another. There were about four or five different types of penicillins at that time. I were involved discriminating them by X-ray diffraction patterns.
There were several people doing X-ray work.
One reason I wanted to go to MIT was Dr. Berger's work there in X-ray diffraction. And one of the reasons I wanted to go to Caltech was because of Pauling's work with X-ray diffraction. Now, the ultimate structure of penicillin was worked out in England by Dorothy Crowfoot. I never met her. She was on the other side of the ocean working. But she had worked it out using X-ray diffraction patterns.
I come from that side of the water. I did meet her. Yes, probably in the 1960s, I guess. Would you say your interest in the instrumentation side was shared by other graduate students at Illinois? Were you in the mainstream or?
Well, there were about four or five graduate students under Dr. Clark for their dissertation. We were all in one hall of offices. And the X-ray equipment was in an adjacent laboratory.
Excuse me, but you might want to tell them what you noticed reading the book that just came, that you had the same professors that Dr. Beckman had only 20 years later.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There's a remarkable parallel between our paths, he being 20 or 25 years before me.
Yes. Does Speed Marvel and Roger Adams Roger Adams, I guess, was in Washington a lot.
Yes, in that period of time. He wasn't around the university.
Yes.
Marvel was.
Did you take some coursework with him? Did you?
I don't remember the name of the book. Classes under Marvel. I will tell this amusing instance about that, however. When I came to doing the thesis, I had done it and submitted it to the thesis committee, one of which was Marvel, and he wouldn't sign it. And the reason was that there were a lot of misspellings. And he thought that any PhD ought to know how to spell the English language. My wife was the one that did the typing. And to this day, she can't spell the words.
But everybody else passed it.
I had friends in other classes who were on the thesis committee.
Because the two of you had actually met at Illinois, is that?
No, we met at Stetson.
Oh, Stetson. Okay.
And
we were married when we were in Illinois, right. My last year of graduate studies.
Did you overlap in Illinois with Charles Price?
No.
No. Illinois, of course, had a very strong industrial connection. Did you think at all about trying to take an academic position?
Yes, I thought about it. In fact, I had every intention when I left Illinois that I would return when I had a little experience under my belt in the industrial side of things. When I went then to Tennessee with my first job, it was with Tennessee Eastman Company, and this was also the hometown of Virginia.
So it made you didn't influence this decision. who recruited you to Tennessee Eastman?
Dr. Hinkey.
Yes, Dr. Hinkey was responsible for this, and this is the same Dr. Hinkey who was Dr. Beckman's best man.
Mm-hmm. What was he hiring you to do?
Well, I guess primarily the school wanted its hands on any male student it could get. Help me out, Jimmy.
They wanted you. Tennessee Eastman was a division of Kodak, and they did not have a physics laboratory. So they hired Wilbur to set up a physics laboratory. He had one of the first electron microscopes.
That's a little early before that time with the microscope. I did for my first publication a paper on the oxidation of lubricating oils.
What about the graph, chromatograph?
That comes later.
Well, there was, I think, infrared was just kind of making waves.
Yes, I should mention that. In this physics laboratory, which I was setting up for Tennessee Eastman, the only instrument that they had was a Perkin-Elmer infrared spectrophotometer, but nobody could make it work. And I went in there and figured out the problem was that the thermocouples had to be evacuated. They wouldn't work in atmospheric pressure. And I got that running, and I think I made a impression throughout the laboratory that I could make this darn bit of equipment work. We did use it a lot. It was a Perkin-Elmer instrument. Gradually I got other instruments and other infrared spectrophotometers and did much of my first work in at Tennessee Eastman with that that infrared instrument.
What other spectrophotometers did you get? What?
Well, I got a Beckman spectrophotometer. Mm-hmm. There's something interesting here. I'm trying to bring it up. Oh, I had several rooms, and they were all bare, except for this Perkin-Elmer instrument. And I was sitting there looking out the window one day, and in walks the director of research. In tow was C.E.K. Meese, whose fame was in photography. And I didn't know who it was that had just come into my laboratory. I was a little embarrassed to find out who it was. It was the CEO of Tennessee Eastman, along with the CEO of Eastman Kodak. And here I was asking, who are you? That same thing happened again. They brought around somebody to see the physics laboratory and introduced me to this man, and I had no idea who he was, and I asked him, what was the name again? It turned out to be one of the Nobel laureates. Exactly which one, I don't remember now.
They must have been proud of the lab and the instrumentation to be. I mean, the CEO's
yes.
Stopping by.
They were visiting, of course, the whole laboratory, which was a lot more than mine. But, they were interested in it. And I remember C.E.K. Meese told the director after he finished their visit that this was some of the best electron micrographs that they had ever seen. And this was, of course, a form of photography.
Well, was it when you were buying these other instruments? Was it difficult to get authorization? Difficult to get the funds? Or
well, surprisingly, no. I think in part it was because I got that infrared instrument to working in the first place. But I remember one day the director of the laboratory came in and asked me, did I want a I don't remember what they call it, but did I want this very elaborate instrument, spectrophotometer, which Kodak used a great deal of in their development of color photography. Did I want one of those? They were a $25,000 instrument. And I said, well, let me think about it. And when I did come back, I come back to them and said, I'd much rather have a Beckman DU spectrophotometer than this very elaborate spectrophotometer. And the reason that I said I wanted it, because I knew that I could do a lot more towards studying molecules with the ultraviolet spectrophotometer than any other instrument that I could get my hands on. Well, I never had any trouble. More instruments were thrust upon me than I knew what to do with. That electron microscope was one of them. It was the very first model that RCA made that we got, and it was the director again said, well, we should have one of these, shouldn't we, in the laboratory? And I said, that'd be great to have. And so long as we can have the right kind, not necessarily the most expensive. That's why I got the DU, spectrophotometer, into the laboratory.
How did you know about the DU? How did you know you wanted one?
There were advertisements in literature and publications, and they were in the fields that I was interested in.
Were you going to spectroscopy meetings of some kind and sort of seeing these things? The Pittsburgh conference was started in the late 1940s.
I went to about the third of those annual conferences and kept going at them for 20 or 25 years.
Can
Jenny is pushed out.
I thought maybe you might just like to glance at these.
Those were some of the
Smithsonian, and there were the early work of the electron microscope.
Okay, I'm looking.
Well, that one is. Oh,
I see. I'm looking at some.
That was in our garden.
Photographic plates here of enlargements of aluminum beryllium substrates.
I did publish on the aluminum beryllium substrate.
We can date these by the publication, I guess. And cellulose acetate from an acetone solution. This is obviously a Tennessee Eastman business.
But yes, they were interested in that picture. Well, no, there is one in the series.
I think they're dated on the back.
Oh, okay, good.
This one is 49.
Yes, they're dated as being exhibited in 1949. Yes, okay. I'm displayed at the Smithsonian. There's polystyrene deposit from a benzene solution. These are neat, so